truth is sometimes stranger than fiction. Finding out the truth is the hard part. Join us in our search with the Paranet Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Once again, let me give out the vitals for our listeners tonight on Real Audio via KCNR, our affiliate in Salt Lake City. If you're on the, if you're outside of the continental United States, you can reach us tonight. If you're listening to us, you can reach us by going to the MIRCUS.undernet.org, and we're on channel Paranet UFO Continuum. If you're within the continental United States, our toll-free number is 1-800-836-2009. Now, it's my pleasure tonight to introduce a woman who went through an incredible experience in 1961. It's one of the cases that I myself have been personally fond of over the years. Has so much information in it, and it represents a probably one of the first. I know that there was a similar type of an experience in South America that preceded this one in the late 50s. But again, this one is very incredible. There was a book written by John Fuller called The Interrupted Journey. There was also a television movie that was made called The UFO Incident. It is my pleasure to introduce tonight, all the way from New Hampshire with us, on the line is Betty Hill. Good evening, Betty.
Good evening.
I want to thank you, first of all, for being on the program.
Thank you.
I understand that you have published a book called A Common Sense Approach to UFOs.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what that book does or what it tells people.
Well, let me begin in the beginning, sort of. When our experience first became known, we became a focal point of people reporting UFO sightings to us.
Right.
So that I started collecting all kinds of information here in New Hampshire about UFO sightings. And then in that 1975, after the movie, I started getting calls from people who were calling me and saying, I think I was abducted, but I don't know. And so I started working with these people to find out if they were abducted or not. And if they were not, what was the source of their beliefs? And, of course, as a result of this, I had to develop criteria to separate the real abductions from the psychological ones. And so my book just sort of grew out of all this research.
Okay. Now, before we get too much into the book, let's roll the clock back to 1961 for our listeners who are not aware of what happened. Tell us what happened to you.
All right. In fact, this is the first chapter of my book.
Okay.
Everybody else has written about me, so I thought it was time I did it.
Okay.
So, September 19, 1961. We left Montreal, Canada, in late afternoon, and we were driving down to the White Mountains of New Hampshire when we suddenly saw what we thought was a new star in the sky. When it began to move, we assumed it was a satellite, and then it turned and came and started coming in towards us. And it followed us for several miles in an area called Indian Head. It left the top of the mountain, came out over the highway, and stopped in midair directly in front of us. This is when Bonnie got out of the car with the binoculars in an attempt to try to identify this craft. And as he looked up, he could see a group of men standing in the windows looking down at him, and the craft began to descend. And he had the feeling they were trying to grab him, to capture him. So he ran back to the car, and we went speeding down the highway, and we continued along. We kept looking for the craft again. We didn't see it. And about 30 miles further south, Barney turned off the main highway onto a secondary road, and then we found ourselves on a dirt road, and the men who had been on the craft were standing on a curve in the road in front of us. And then the car motor stalled. They came up in two groups, took us out of the car to a path in the woods to where the craft was on the ground. And they just told us, you know, they kept saying, don't be afraid. I'm not going to harm you. We just want to do some simple tests.
Now, what did these folks look like, Betty?
The people.
They look like people?
The people. If you one walked across the room and you only saw his back, you would never turn around to look.
Now, in the book Interrupted Journey, Fuller provided some drawings.
Yes.
The beings that were drawn, are they accurate to what you saw? Because those don't look very human.
Those were the very, very beginning of the medical hypnosis by Dr. Simon.
Okay.
No, they did not look like that.
Okay, so they just look like people.
They're people. Their facial features are a little different from ours. Their eyes are larger, nose smaller, no lips, no protruding part of the ear, and no hair.
Okay. Now, they took you on board.
Right.
And what happened there?
They did some simple tests, and they took us into separate rooms. And there was, well, for purposes of identification, there was the one who seemed to be in charge and the one who spoke English. So we called him the leader. And then there was a second man who did the testing, so we called him the examiner. And then there were nine others that stayed out in the corridor, so we called them the crew members.
Okay.
So they did some simple testing, and when my exam was over with, the examiner went into Barney's room. And by this time, I completely lost all fear. I was beginning to enjoy myself. And I'm walking around the room, and I'm talking with them, and I said I needed something to take home to prove this had happened. And he gave me a book, which I looked at briefly. But then, of course, when I'm leaving the craft, they decided to take the book away from me. And he showed me a star map of where they were from. And he asked me questions about, you know, like, how long did we live? What was the length of our lives? What was our nourishment? What did we eat? Things like this.
Okay.
And then Barney's exam was completed. With him, his exam was very similar to mine, except with me they were interested in my nervous system, and they tried to do what they call a pregnancy test. But with Barney, they were interested in his bone structure. And
let me interrupt you right there, Betty, the pregnancy test. Now, later these things become significant.
Because nobody ever heard of it on this planet.
What did they do to you with the pregnancy test?
They attempted to insert a needle-like instrument in my navel.
Okay, and then...
In 65, doctors said, impossible, cannot be done. And now they do it every day.
Okay, all right. Go ahead and continue now. They showed you the star map.
Yes.
Describe that star map, because I think that was that's going to be another... important aspect of this because of the Marjorie Fish work.
Right.
Okay, they showed you a three-dimensional star map, right?
Right. Yeah. And Dr. Simon gave me a post-hypnotic suggestion that if I wanted to, I could sketch the star map, but don't think about it. Just sit down and do it. So one day I did. And then later we discovered I had actually sketched a real pattern of stars, which can be seen only south of Mexico City. So it wasn't anything I looked at the sky and saw. And they explained the map to me. There were lines on it. Heavy lines were where they went all the time. And the broken lines were expeditions. And in doing the research of this, the heavy lines all go to star systems that we believe to be 5 to 11 billion years old. And the broken lines all go to star systems younger than that. But also, on the map, I had two stars, which our astronomers did not find until 1969 or 70.
Right. That was quite a controversy, too, because I know it was debated scientifically as well in the scientific forum.
Right. And not only that, this area of the sky has a large number of stars. But I had all the stars that we believe to be possible, have the characteristics to be possible to have planets and maybe life. And I had just those and none others.
Okay. Betty, hold that thought right there. We got to go to a break. And when we come back, we'll get more into the experience and what happened and go from there. My guest tonight is Betty Hill. We're talking about the UFO abduction experience that she had with Barney, her husband, in September 1961. And we went to break. Betty was talking about this star map. One thing I want to say about the star map is that, and Betty, correct me if I'm wrong on this information, but you drew this star map under hypnosis several, I guess, a couple of years after you had seen it.
Well, I saw it in 61.
Right.
And I sketched it in 65.
Okay, and when you sketched it, a woman in, where was she at? She was in Ohio?
At the Marjorie Fish.
Marjorie Fish was in Ohio, right?
In the beginning, but then she moved to Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Okay, tell us what Marjorie did with your map, and because I think this is part of, this is a quite incredible piece of information that goes with this story, and it has turned out, like you said, in 1970, they discovered two of the stars that you had drawn that they said were not there. Until we were able to see further out into space.
Well, Marjorie made models, and she took strings and put beads, and she put us in the middle, and then started working out light years. And then she had to start removing those stars that could not possibly have life. And when she completed, there was my map.
And that's that. And the, where did the idea come from that they were from, like, Zeta Reticuli?
From the research of her star map.
Okay. What did she find, or how did she determine that it was Zeta Reticuli and that our sun was there in that part of that area?
Well, the on the star map that I saw, it was very apparent that it was not done from this planet. It was done from their home planet. And it had two big stars on the forefront. So we assumed that those stars must be their home planets.
Okay, okay. Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. And I think they're about 37 and a half light years away, so they're classified as nearby stars.
Okay. Now, go back to on board now. You're shown the star map. They take away this booklet there, the book that they were going to let you take. What did the book have in it?
It was printing. It went up and down in columns rather than across.
Okay.
And it was about the size of a regular encyclopedia. But
and you
I didn't see any pictures. I had.
Did you did see the writing, though?
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of different samples that are out there today. Have you seen any of these samples? Do they match up at all with some of the stuff that you saw?
I saw a sample that came from a man in Florida that was somewhat similar to what I saw. But other samples, the handwriting, there was no similarity.
Okay. All right. So now they bring Barney out, and they take you back to your car.
Yes. I invited them to come back.
You invited them to come back?
Oh, yeah. I was begging him, please come back. You know, I know there's a lot of people who'd love to meet you.
Did he tell you that you were going to forget the experience?
He said they were going to make us forget the experience, and I told him there was no way he could make me forget. And he said maybe I would remember.
Okay. And then what happened after that?
And we returned to the car and came home.
Now, at some point in the during the beginning of the experience, did you not hear beeping sounds or something, and that kind of signified
when we were speeding down the highway?
Uh-huh.
There was a series of beeping sounds. Apparently, they hit the trunk of the car, and the car vibrated. And then after we had left the craft and we were back on the main highway, we had a second series of beeping sounds.
And then you were like 30 miles away from where you started?
Yeah.
And okay. You get home, and then what happens?
Well, the first thing we noticed, the trip had taken much longer than it should. Our watches had stopped functioning. The tops of Barney's shoes were scuffed. The strap on his new binoculars was broken. My dress was torn.
Okay.
And later became covered with a pink powdery substance, which stained it. And labs haven't been able to identify what caused the pink stains.
You still have this dress?
Oh, yes.
And they've tried to determine what caused it, and there's no way?
And everything they're testing is a blue dress, and all testing comes out blue or gray.
I see.
Nothing causes the I haven't borrowed anything that would cause a pink stain.
Okay.
And then I called a police officer and told him about this experience. And he told us to call Pease Air Force Base, which we did. I reported it to them, luckily, because later we found out that the craft had been picked up on radar leaving that area at 2:14 a.m., and they had sent two military planes from Pease, which is our, at that time was our local Air Force base, out to check the craft out, and they must have seen something because today their reports, the reports of these two pilots and the two planes are still classified.
Is that, that's incredible. So there is some kind of official correlation to all of this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious. In the book...
not only that, you know, I was on a TV program, Lie Detector,
uh-huh.
And I was questioned for 30 minutes by F. Lee Bailey, and then I sat down in front of the cameras and took lie detector testing.
And, of course, you passed them.
Very high marks.
Yeah. I'm curious, Betty. In the book, John Fuller mentions the fact that there was some interest when you talked to the officer at Pease. Apparently, the tone of the conversation changed when you mentioned to them that Barney had seen these appendages start coming out of the craft with these red lights on it.
Yeah.
What do you attribute that to? What did you think that they might have known about this?
Well, of course. See, getting involved in UFOs and reports. UFOs have been flying around New Hampshire since 1932.
Okay.
During World War II, when the Ground Observer Corps volunteers set out nights watching the skies for enemy planes, they were reporting UFOs. Air Force planes were coming out from Plattsburgh, New York, and chasing them. That was during World War II. And there's been increasing numbers ever since.
Well, New Hampshire has had a considerable... The whole section of the northeast part of the country seems to have been a major area for UFO reports and some spectacular abduction reports, not just yours, but the Buff Ledge incident was not too far from there. Are you familiar with that one? That happened 19...
I don't get involved with any reported abductions obtained through hypnosis.
Okay, why not?
Because they're not using medical hypnosis. They're using the old pilot game of flight of fantasy.
Okay, now...
There's a great misunderstanding and lack of knowledge about hypnosis. Now, the hypnosis that we had is medical hypnosis. It's used in surgery, childbirth, to stop hemorrhaging. It's a medical tool.
Now, we're talking to Betty Hill, who is talking about her abduction experience in September of 1961, probably one of the most famous and one of the most covered cases next to the Travis Walton abduction experience in 75, which was made into a major motion picture as well. Betty, before we went to break, you were talking about medical hypnosis as opposed to some of this other stuff.
Yes.
I know you're very outspoken on UFO research today.
Yes, I am.
Why? Tell me what your feelings are about it.
Well, I wrote the book simply because about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, the general public started coming to me in absolute panic. They've been listening to all these programs and reports and all, and some people were getting so they were afraid to go to bed at night. They didn't know if aliens were going to walk through the walls and torture them and abuse them. And then these people were so upset. They were under the care of a doctor. They were in danger of losing their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started coming. I started working with them and saying, now, look, let's get a little bit of common sense in this. These are people. They can have no more ability to walk through a wall than you and I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and trying to get them to get a realistic picture.
Now,
what UFOs really are.
Okay, now, this is interesting because, you know, I am critical, too, of some of the way that research is done. However, I'm kind of curious to hear a little bit more about what your criticisms are as far as, for example, if these beings possess a technology to be able to traverse great distances in space. You know, a lot of these reports that we hear today about them coming through the walls, taking people out of their bedrooms and that type of thing. What do you think those are?
Let's go back to Dr. Simon.
Okay.
Dr. Simon is one of the top psychiatrists in the United States. He was the director of the Mason General Hospital in New York, a treatment center for servicemen returning from World War II. His work was so spectacular that in 1945, the U.S. Army made a documentary of him. But then they did not release it until they released it in 1990. And it shows the use of medical hypnosis.
Now, what's...
It really is a miracle.
Okay, define medical hypnosis for me. When he put you under, what did he do?
First of all, he put us under without even talking to us.
Okay, did he use a drug?
Nope.
So he
nope.
How did he put you under hypnosis? So it was just his skill?
I was walking around the room looking at pictures, and he just said to me, he's talking about the pictures, and music is playing, and he said, walk towards me. And I started to walk towards him, and my eyes closed, and he said, that was easy.
And that was it.
And then he said, Go over and sit down in the chair in front of my desk. And I didn't move. He said, oh, excuse me. Open your eyes. Go over and sit down. So that I could see. See, even the first stage of hypnosis, if you're really in a trance, and most people aren't even in a trance, they don't even know what it is, You cannot open your eyes. If you were given a suggestion that your arm is a steel rod, you nor nobody else can move it. That's the testing for the first stage.
Now,
and that's a stage of suggestibility. I can do hypnosis. I can take you, and in 20 minutes, I can give you an introduction that will probably include everything you've ever heard.
So what are you suggesting or saying that there's a possibility that a lot of these abduction cases that we hear about today are implanted by the hypnotherapist?
Of course. They're saying, 3 to 5 million Americans are abducted on a regular basis.
Well, actually, they're saying more. They said the Roper poll indicates maybe 17 million.
Okay, well, think about it.
It is crazy.
1,000 have to be abducted every night.
Well,
days a week.
Well, of course, and they'd be very busy, and I think that...
There'd be so many UFOs in the skies, our planes couldn't fly.
Well, now, why do you think that this is happening the way it is happening?
What?
The way things are going now.
Well, see, when I talk with these people who are very concerned, I explain to them there's two UFO fields. There's the science fiction. And then there's the real field. Now, the real field, and this is something I would like to talk about, because of so many sightings in certain areas, we were able to pinpoint areas where UFOs were coming in large numbers almost every night. So for years, we had a volunteer network, which I call the Silent Network. We had college professors. We had high-ranking military. We had scientists. We did all kinds of testing. But every night, we were covering the skies. We went out. We sat quietly. We observed. We took pictures, we looked through telescopes, sometimes we did some experiments, and we learned a great deal about them. Now, since my book's been published, I'm finding out that all over the United States, these silent networks exist. It's amazing that, like, one state, one area, they have 300 volunteers. There's no membership, there's no publication, there's no publicity. People are just going out, and they want to learn about UFOs.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Have you had contact with the same being since that experience?
No.
In 61?
No.
The UFOs that have been coming in that you've been talking about, have you had any communication with them?
What do you mean by communication?
Well, I guess when...
Like, Okay. Well, first of all, there's one area for 30 years that the UFO has come in on a fairly regular basis and lands. Now, people walk up to a highway, but you cannot approach it. You can't go up and knock on the door of a UFO. And usually, it's very rare that anyone ever leaves the craft.
So they very rarely even come out of it.
Right. But also, now I have filmed UFOs, and I have over 200 different kinds of UFOs. People talk about the disc. That's only a small type.
Betty, what do they want? What do they want from us? Or are they just curious, or do they want something specific from us?
Well, I've had a lot of contacts over the years. They're out here, they're circling this planet, and I think they're coming down here to get whatever they need for their survival out there. I don't think they're really particularly interested in us as people, unless they want to find out some specific knowledge.
Okay.
And then they might grab someone, do the testing, and go back out into space.
So you think that a lot of the stuff that's going on today is just mainly for people lining their pockets with...
It's science fiction.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Betty, well...
Because, you know, there are real abductions. And every real abduction is totally different from every other one.
Are they similar to yours?
Nope.
They're not similar?
Nope.
How do you determine if it's a real abduction or not? Is it just... What measure do you use?
The criteria? Well, every single real abduction has been done exactly what Bonnie and I did.
Mm-hmm.
They told the police. And some of them told the military, as well as the police. And 50% of them have been in the emergency room at the hospital.
Really?
Within 3 or 4 hours afterwards.
With physical trauma or just emotional trauma?
Breathing difficulties, loss of balance, eyes don't focus, upset stomach.
Did you have those symptoms yourself?
No, we didn't.
Okay. Betty, we got to go to our another break. When we come back, I want to get information about how people can get your book, A Common Sense Approach to UFOs. It's been a very interesting hour, so stay tuned.
Totally different.
Yeah, definitely. Betty, I want to thank you. We've run out of time, but I want to thank you very much. You're a very courageous lady. And
may I make one statement?
Yeah, and I also, we have about a minute. I want you to give your address because this book is not available in stores yet.
No.
But if you will give out your address after you make your comment, we'll have to do it kind of quick because we're running up to the
one
end.
One thing I wanted to say, I dedicate the book to UFOs with love.
Okay. Okay. How do we get a hold of a copy of this, Betty?
All right. Post Office Box 55, Greenland, New Hampshire, 03840.
03840. Okay, that's Post Office Box 55, Greenland, New Hampshire, 03840. Now, real quick, how much is it?
$15.95 plus shipping and handling of $3.
Okay, plus shipping and handling of $3. Okay, $15.95.
And autograph by request.
Oh, absolutely. Betty, again, thank you very much. I want to thank you very much for being on the program. I've enjoyed this hour, and I'm sorry we didn't have enough time to get into more of it. I might have you back at another date, and maybe we'll get in a little bit more what's going on, okay?
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Betty. Until then, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.